From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Monday edition, the Supreme Court handed down a decision earlier today that further complicates religious freedom in America by changing the meaning of the word sex. We'll talk about it with David Kortman, Senior Counsel and Vice President of U.S. Litigation for the Alliance Defending Freedom. And what are we to make of mayors and other elected leaders like those in Seattle who are abandoning their responsibilities to maintain law and order by allowing protesters to seize control? In Seattle, they've taken over six blocks, set up borders with armed guards keeping people out. What is the ideology that is driving this lawlessness, and where did it come from? I'll be joined by former congressman and now dean of the School of Business at Liberty University, Dr. David Bratt. Also, FRC's team of legal and policy experts will join me a little later analyzing today's Supreme Court decision and what it means for you. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. I want to thank Sarah for filling in for me last week. I had a number of things going on, including USERF responsibilities and family responsibilities. Took a little time off this past week, and so enjoyed that. So I thank Sarah for filling in. By the way, this is the month of June. I know you know that because we're right in the middle of it. This is the end of our fiscal year. And so for those of you who have stood with us over the years, some of you are newer supporters, new partners, others yet to be partners, well, we invite you to join us as we come to the end of our fiscal year. In fact, great opportunity. We have some very generous supporters who have put forth a $1 million challenge gift that if you give to us today, this week, if you give toward this effort of defending faith, family, and freedom, your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $1 million. So if you want to send in $1 million a day, it'll be matched with another $1 million, or $100 will be matched with $100, $10 matched with 10. So I've got folks standing by to take your call today. Members of our team who are standing there waiting to take your call. 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. Let me give it to you again. 800-225-4008. Or, as always, you can go to TonyPerkins.com and make a contribution there as well. So take advantage of this opportunity to join with some partners who have put forth this $1 million pledge, this challenge match that can help us go into the new fiscal year strong, defending faith, family, and freedom in our nation's capital. All right, as I mentioned today, the Supreme Court, by a 6-3 ruling, issued a ruling, that redefines the term sex in federal law. Now, what are the implications of this decision? Joining me now to talk about this, one of our good friends over at Alliance Defending Freedom, David Kortman. He's a senior counsel and vice president of U.S. litigation. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me on again.
All right, David, let me just start with this. What was the issue before the Supreme Court, and what did the court decide?
Yeah, really an incredible decision. But basically, the bottom line issue was, who gets to decide what the law is in our country? We have our three branches. Everybody knows that. And we know that Congress gets to decide what the law is. In this case today, as you mentioned before, the question, what does sex mean in the law? In Title VII, which protects workplace discrimination, what does the word because of sex mean? Enacted almost 60 years ago, obviously meant between the difference between men biologically and women biologically. And today, the Supreme Court actually changed 60 years later what the law meant. So as Justice Alito said in dissent, it was legislating from the bench.
I mean, this is the type of activism that we were seeing the court move away from under these new constitutionalist, constructionist, strict constructionist, textualist, whatever you want to describe them as, those that adhere to the Constitution. But this is kind of, I mean, a 6-3. This is not insignificant. 6-3. That means only three of the justices ruled that this is beyond the ability of the court to redefine terms.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think most problematic about that is the six that ruled were claiming to be textualist in doing so. And the reason that's so dangerous is there's no longer the admission that this is living, breathing, and we're changing it as we go, but they're doing it under the guise of reading what the text says, even though when you look back in 1964, which is the time period you're supposed to look at for the meaning of it, no one would have ever guessed that sex meant sexual orientation and transgender status.
Yeah, I mean, this is a dangerous precedent, not from my perspective, not just on the merits of this topic, this issue of transgenderism and sex and what it means, but you could pull any word out of the Constitution or any word out of statute and redefine it based upon today's understanding.
Well, that's right. And the important part about this is, as I mentioned before, the reason it matters that Congress gets to do this type of legislation, because it's the body where people go to their congressmen and women and say, look, there are other concerns here. So Congress goes through the legislative process. They weigh pros and cons. They weigh the balance. They bring in other considerations like religious liberty and religious freedom issues. And then they come to some compromise solution. When you go to the court, all that process is cut out, and you are actually given one specific determination of what this means without all those other considerations being taken into place. And I think that's problematic.
Well, and the fact that this issue has come before Congress on a number of occasions, and Congress has refused to redefine the word sex, refusing to move beyond the biological nature of sex being male and female.
That's exactly right, and that's the point that one of the dissents made is basically this has gone before Congress dozens of times. So this is not an unclear thing where the statute, people wanted to amend it to include sexual orientation for decades now, every single year, and then, of course, recently transgender status. And every single time, it didn't garner enough votes in Congress to do so. And now the Supreme Court has done what people failed to be able to do through Congress, and I think that just shows the problem with it.
So, David Cortman, I want to move on prospectively to what implication this might have on religious freedom in our country, because the facts in this case, this was a privately owned funeral home. It was a Christian family that owned this funeral home for over 100 years, I believe, or close to 100 years, the Harris Funeral Home. And the issue here was the director who they had hired worked for them a number of years. He was a man, all of a sudden decided he wanted to come to work in female clothing. He was a funeral director, interacted with the people, the grieving families. He was a prominent public representative of the funeral home. And they said, no, you can't do this. And that was the issue in this case. Now, this is going to have implications then for others going forward who may be operating according to a historic and biblical definition of human sexuality.
Well, it will, and the context is broad. There's many concerning implications, not only for the religious person who owns a business, not only for religious non-for-profits. You know, even when you get to churches, who's covered by what's called the ministerial exemption, you know, which person are pastors and bring out and teach the faith. But even going beyond that, you know, we've heard situations across the country in athletics where boys and young men who now identify as girls are taking scholarships and titles and accolades away from women, or in women's homeless shelters where they're trying to force biological men to sleep next to women who have been battered and abused. There's so many contexts, not only in the religious liberty context, but in privacy context, where this is going to create havoc as we go forward.
I mean, is this one of those legal and cultural Pandora boxes that have been opened here?
I think it is, because what's interesting is the court says, you know, we're not addressing bathrooms and restroom facilities and all these different issues. So the opinion raises more questions than it answers. The problem is, you know, now the other side's going to come forward and saying, we get access to all those things. We get sports. We get shelters. You know, we get access to privacy and bathrooms and all these different things. And culturally, that basically eliminates the distinction between male and females. There are biological differences that I think everybody acknowledges, or at least we used to, that's going to create havoc as we go forward in all different types of contexts.
David, I would think you're absolutely right, because once you have redefined sex in one aspect, even though this is Title VII, but once you have redefined it in one aspect in federal law, it's appealed to in every other case. And how do you defend it in another situation, like, for instance, you mentioned sports. That's a big one. And there's cases in the pipeline there. We're seeing this playing out in, I think, in Idaho, where that's happening even now with the NCAA weighing in on this. But once you cross this line, there's no stuffing this back into the bag. David, did I lose you? Oh, I think we lost David. Well, we'll see if we can't reconnect him here. But this is the way this works. It's incremental. All right, so in this one area, which I still think is completely wrong on its face for many different ways, but it's once you judicial activism, that's the way it works, incrementally. And so in this one aspect of law, Title VII, which is employment law, well, they're going to come back and they're going to appeal to this court decision. They're going to cite this court decision when they're appealing, as I was just mentioning, in sports, that men who say they're women should be able to participate in sports. How can you not, if you are consistent, logically, which that's a big question, none of this is logical, but if you're going to be consistent in your reasoning, and you say that, you know, an employee can show up, who was a man, can show up dressed as a woman, even though he's representing that company or that, you know, in this case, a funeral home. I mean, how can you not say that a man who feels like a woman cannot participate in women's sports? I think we have David back on the line. David, I was just making the point that once you cross this bridge, once you cross this and you say in Title VII of the law that you can, that sex means gender identity, how can you not come to that same conclusion in other aspects of the law?
Yeah, and that's going to be the difficult argument as we go forward. Now, I still think there's arguments that I think are not only rooted in the law but based in common sense and biology, that there are differences between men and women, and those differences matter. Everybody's equal in the law. I think they should be, but there's a difference between men and women. We know that. And do we want, regardless of what your views are on any of these issues, you know, do we want our daughters to be in the showers with boys who are playing sports? Do we want this happening across the board? Because that is the introduction to this, and it's something I know we're going to continue to fight against because we think it's wrong for a number of reasons, but it's something I don't think we should just allow to go forward unchallenged.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and we do appreciate the tremendous job that Alliance Defending Freedom does in defending freedom, religious freedom, and other freedoms that are vital to America's success and future. David Kortman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, appreciate it, Tony.
David Kortman, Senior Counsel and Vice President of U.S. Litigation for Alliance Defending Freedom. Let me just go on record. This is extremely, extremely troubling and dangerous because, again, once you cross this line, now, there'll be those that'll try to make arguments, and they're all rational, reasonable arguments to say, well, we shouldn't allow it in sports because of the biological differences. Well, those biological differences exist in every situation. It's rooted in fact. But if you can deny the facts or suppress the facts in one category, how long can you hold out in another? It will just be a matter of time. This is the same thing we saw with the redefinition of marriage. And that's not finished. You see polygamy being advanced, all sorts of things. All right, coming up next, we're going to take a look at what is the ideology driving what's happening in Seattle and other major cities. That's next here on Washington Watch.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Let me remind you, don't miss the opportunity to stand with FRC as we counter the left's agenda, as we work to advance truth and shape the culture from a biblical perspective. Help FRC finish our fiscal year strong before June 30th by taking advantage of the $1 million challenge match so we can continue voicing your values here in Washington, D.C. I've got folks standing by from our team to take your call. Your contribution today, your gift, it will be doubled. The impact will be doubled. 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008. I just talking about the nation's highest court, some of the smartest people, I would say, in the world, some of them, I mean, from a standpoint of book knowledge, but common sense seems to be eluding them. The word sex, redefining it. And as we're talking about, it's a Pandora's box in what terms of what it opens up. So with that context, this next story doesn't look as crazy, where you have mayors, well, like the mayor in Seattle, essentially pulling back the police, allowing these protesters, armed protesters in some cases, taking over six city blocks, setting up borders, which I find fascinating that these people who are against borders are setting up borders and doing checks with people who come in. They got guns, checking IDs for people to come into their autonomous zone. What is the ideology that has given rise to this? And how, what are we to make of this as Christians? I mean, the world, I mean, just in the last, I mean, you look at the pandemic that swept the country and the world, and then on the heels of that, we've got this. What do we make of this? We're joining now to talk more about this, former congressman from Virginia and now dean of the School of Business at my alma mater, Liberty University, Dr. Dave Bratt. Dave, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate you.
Well, when I was thinking about this, having this conversation, you were the first one who came to mind because you get all of it. You get the economic issues, but you get the historical issues, you get the biblical issues, you got it all in one package. What's the ideology that's driving this number one, the craziness, and it's always been there, but now these public officials who are abandoning their responsibilities and letting this lawlessness run rampant.
Yeah, well, you know as well as I do, but I'll put a little curveball on this for you that you may not be expecting. So we want to say it's nihilism, right? The belief in nothingness, that there's no moral absolutes, there's nothing that matters on the left. They don't have a theologian, philosopher, or ethical system they can point to. They put that through in practice in K-12 education, higher ed. The seminaries are now semi-controlled by the left. And so you want to say nihilism, but it's more than that. And because the nihilism is actually a direct attack on the fundamentals that made America great, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's an attack on the Judeo-Christian tradition, number one, and then two, the rule of law, and then three, pro-business free markets. And so then you say, what ideology causes that? And all you need to do, and you use the right word, it's a cultural revolution. And who started the cultural revolution? China in the 60s. We did not end World War II. We ended the Soviet Union. Communism is still going on, right? And we never thought China would rise to our side. And so what's going on here is the billionaires, right? China is now the same size economy as we are. Now, we're growing at 1 or 2% and now negative for a little bit. And China's still having a terrible time growing at 5 or 6%. So the billionaire class has been hoisting and fostering this neo-Marxist stuff, and they're the puppeteers up in the sky, right? So you got AOC and all the shiny coins down here doing all the crazy stuff. But the billionaire class, watch the billionaire class, watch the money always, right? What's really going on? Everyone still wants to keep doing business with China. And so what has China done to its people, right? What are they sending over here our way? They've separated their people from religion. They separated their people from their family, from their mothers and fathers. They've separated their people from their history, from Confucian ethics, and their storied history over five centuries. And so it's kind of a complex, bizarre story that's multifaceted, but that's my – having been in D.C., it's always follow the money first, and the money is China and the billionaire class. They are fine and dandy with having chaos down here at our level. Right, because they're making money all the way to the bank, and so they're with China, the only growing huge economy in the world, and the rest follows along for the ride.
But they have to they have to rule with a heavy hand in order to keep all the pieces in place, because it doesn't work voluntarily, as we've seen there in China.
Oh yeah, no, they got 1 million to 2 million Uyghur Turkic Muslims in concentration camps today. They had Tiananmen, they got Tibet, they've got live organ harvesting. You know all the stuff's going. They rule with an iron fist, right? They got social metrics on every person that if you get out of line, you don't get to buy a car. If your social score isn't high enough, you don't get to buy a house. On every single person with facial recognition software and, you know, at Liberty, we're going to have a huge thing come up in D.C. to educate the country on what's going on. But, you know, Bill Gertz has a book called Deceiving the Sky. If you want details, read that. Two-star general Robert Spalding, has a book on stealth war. He's phenomenal. And people need to start, because you won't believe it at first blush. And then when you read the evidence, we're already at war. It's an information, cyber, economic war. They're coming after us. Our billionaire class is selling out our own country in order to make billions more. With China.
We're coming up on a break, and I knew I was going to need more time with you, so I want you to stick around on the break, because this has been facilitated in our country, in my view, and I want to get your opinion on this. And if I'm wrong, you feel free to correct me, even though it's my program, is that this has been facilitated by our education system in America, that they have aided this indoctrination that has taken place, and it has brought us to a crisis point. And we want to talk about that next on the other side of the break. Dr. David Bratt, my guest, Dean of the School of Business at Liberty University, former congressman from Virginia, great guy. And we're going to continue this conversation on the other side of the break. By the way, great time to give us a call during the break if you would like to be a part of supporting FRC and our work. We've got folks standing by to take your phone call during this break, so don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch. right after this. Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community. And keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. As I mentioned, we are coming up to the end of our fiscal year, and we have a $1 million challenge match so that everything you give will be doubled. Your impact can be doubled. I've got team members standing by to take your call. Love to talk with you. 800-225-4008. 800-225-4008. Give them a call right now. Dr. David Bratt, my guest, Dean of the School of Business at Liberty University, talking about what is happening in Seattle and elsewhere. It began in Minneapolis, where the mayor told the police to back down and essentially let the protesters run wild, burning, trashing, looting. Look, two wrongs don't make a right. I've been very clear about this, what took place there in on the streets of Minneapolis, Minnesota, was wrong. Police brutality. I've called it like I saw it. It was bad. But you don't just eliminate law enforcement. You don't abandon your responsibility to uphold law and order as a response. And that's what we're seeing in some of these liberal pockets across America. And we were just discussing the ideology that's coming underneath it that has been seeding the ground, I think, for over a half century to make this moment possible. All right, Dave, am I right? Is it the educational system in America that has been paving the way for this?
Yeah, no, that's spot on. It's been bought and paid for. The K-12 system, of course, no religion courses, no philosophy courses, no ethics courses. And then they move on to change the history books. And parents need to take a look at this. You still do control your school districts to a point. And then the university systems out at Virginia Tech, you know, they had mandatory pronoun choice for all incoming freshmen last year. And that was a shocker to a lot of Virginians. And so higher ed is even paid off to a greater extent because of the foundations and the billionaires, right? And so a lot of people out there listening think it might be a 50-50 world yet when it comes to business people. But it's not. It's 90-10, right? You just think of the Bill Gateses and the Facebooks and the big firms in tech, Silicon Valley, California, New York City. It's all down money now from the big boys on down. So that's where the money flows from education. And then it's gotten even worse, right, down even in Richmond, where I'm from. The business folks left me in the dust, right, because they were scared.
Right,
they were
right.
hiding under the tables because they were under threat.
And the left
threatens everyone to get their agenda.
But in conversations with them, correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, but they would say, I agree with you. I think you're right. But.
Oh, sure.
But I can't support
you. Right.
I mean, I have those conversations myself when I was a public official. And this is what gets me more than anything, and because I think when people ask me, Tony, what's the greatest threat to our country? You know, China's a threat. I get that. North Korea is a threat. All those are threats. But let me tell you what I think the greatest threat is, Dave Brat, is the lack of courage. The lack of courage to stand up for what you know to be right because you're fearful of what others may say or do or what you might lose.
Yeah. No, that's exactly. I ran full-throated, 100%. My voting record was 100%, and I got booted out by the machine for that reason. And you'll see other people getting booted out. And so Republicans, you're going to have to do some extra heavy lifting because the pressure on businesses, if they are threatened in any way, they lose all the liberal consumer base, right? And conservatives just go along with the whole thing, right? We've been watching the news over the last week. Conservatives have just remained silent. The churches are silent. Where's the Speaker of the House and the head of the Senate?
Well, it's this whole thing. I mean, you know, the scripture, Jesus describes us as sheep, and it's in times like these, it is clearly the case. If I were him, I would have not have been as nice. I would have said lemmings. You know, we just too many people just follow along. I mean, look at this mob mentality that has taken place. And I'm not talking about the looting and the burning on the streets. I'm just talking about the mob mentality that is turning common sense upside down and yielding to the intimidations and the threats of just a small percentage of the public.
Yeah, well, I'll just throw in a little bit of biblical interpretation that I think Christians have to hear. And, you know, throughout history, you had Romans 13, obey the rulers because they have been put there by God, right? But this United States grand experiment is a new logic. And the sovereign, in our case, is the people. The government works for us. The people are the king. We are the sovereign. And so do not be passive. God has put us in a responsibility, in a leadership role. And most Christians in our theology, you know, you're prophet, priest, and king. Christ gave us that role. We are all to be prophets and priests. Okay, prophet, you got to have a voice. King, you got to be able to lead. And every Christian is called to that. And teach your kids to aspire to that.
And we've talked about that many times here on the program. So that you're singing to the choir, but it's good to hear that tune again because it is absolutely on key. Dave Brat, thank you so much for joining us. And I, for one, am happy that you're at Liberty University raising up another generation of warriors to stand for truth.
God bless you, Tony. God bless everything you do.
All right. Thank you. Former Congressman Dave Brat, Dr. Dave Brat, Dean of the School of Business at Liberty University. All right. When we come back, we're going to unpack. I got a few more thoughts on what we were just talking about. Then we're going to unpack with FRC's experts, policy experts. We're going to unpack the Supreme Court decision from today. So that's next. Don't go away. More Washington Watch after this break.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. Again, folks, coming up to the end of our fiscal year. Our fiscal year runs from July 1st to June 30th, and we're coming up to the end of that fiscal year. And obviously, maybe it's not obvious. The way we operate, we get no government money. None. Zero. We did not participate in the program that we helped pass. We did that for others, but we wanted to be free to advocate on behalf of others without any interest in it whatsoever. So we have not taken advantage of any government money, never have. And we don't spend it if we don't have it. And so our ability to advocate for the values that you care about is only because we have partners like you across the country. So right now, we've had some generous donors put together a $1 million challenge that will double the impact of what you give. So if you give us a call, I've got team members standing by to take your call, 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. All right, before I bring in Mary Beth Waddell and Travis Weber of our team, I want to just put a period or exclamation point on the conversation I was just having with Dave Bratt. Now, I didn't get into it very much, but into the whole issue with eliminating the police departments. I mean, that's one of the things they're doing in Seattle, or this protest group is doing. They're wanting to disband the police department, but yet they're having their own enforcement there. I mean, you've got to have the enforcement of rules, law. That's what makes society work. And this is moving around the country with this, this abolishing police departments. Let me say this is facilitating the advancement, the acceleration, I should say, of lawlessness, which is what they want. Because when you have lawlessness, you have to have heavy-handed government to bring order. Tyranny has to happen. And so it expands the power of government. It expands the reach of government. It expands the amount of money that government takes in. It expands everything about government, because you have to, in order to counterbalance the chaos, you have to have bigger, more controlling, more invasive government. And the left loves that. But let me just kind of give you some of the practical effects of this, with this whole anti-law enforcement movement that's taking place in the country right now. There are, and most of you who listen to this program on a regular basis know that I spent 10 years as a police officer, still involved with law enforcement. A lot of friends still in law enforcement. This is going to have an effect. In fact, I read an article today about how many, many people, many police officers are leaving. They're getting out because they got a target on them. And it's being facilitated not just by these mobs, but by these cowards that are in elected office who are saying, yeah, we got to get rid of the police. They're all horrible. Look, there are bad policemen. There are. And we need to get rid of them. And we need standards. And I've had conversations with the White House and with Congress about some things that I think could be done to help improve law enforcement in this country. But we need men and women who are willing to put their lives on the line to protect the public. 1% of the population, that's what they are. Just imagine what this country would look like. Imagine what any city in America would look like without police officers. I mean, we have taken away a moral foundation in our culture, and we wonder why people act as if they're a god over issues of life and death. What we need is to restore the moral foundation of our country, not disband law enforcement. We need to bring back the fact that those who are in law enforcement, just as those who are in a public office, are accountable to someone higher than themselves. And that goes back to the whole issue of education we were talking about with Dave Brad, how we've taken God out of our public discourse. We've taken him out of our collective conscience as a nation. And then we wonder why people act in a godless fashion. Well, adding to that chaos, that cultural, moral chaos, goes right back to what happened today at the Supreme Court, handing down a decision on the Harris Funeral Home case out of Michigan. Joining me now to help unpack this a bit more and explain how this will impact you and your family, Travis Weber, FRC's Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs, and Mary Beth Waddell, Senior Legislative Assistant. Travis, Mary Beth, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Let me just start with you. You heard we had David Cortman earlier to give us the big picture of this case. But there's some other nuanced aspects of this. And I'm going to start with you, Travis. One of the things that he did mention, he made reference to and quoted Justice Alito. What did Justice Alito get right in his dissenting opinion?
Yeah, I think Justice Alito's dissent, Tony, captures just overall the right way to approach this case. One of the most significant things he got right, and this opinion was joined by Justice Thomas in dissent, Justice Alito understood that this question ultimately at the core dealt with a matter of biology. The biological distinction and difference between men and women is at the core of how we understand the term sex and the male and female differences that are at the core with Congress's whole point in prohibiting sex discrimination, decades of it under the Civil Rights Act, that the majority really failed to deal with, acknowledged, but then just quickly moved on, really deflected and pivoted, not trying to grapple with the reality that we are trying to protect men and women, and in large part, historically, women from being pushed to the side and discriminated against. And Justice Alito got that right and recognized that. So that was a significant point. I was glad to see him mention that. And I think his dissent showed courage in addition to a proper analysis of the law.
So, Mary Beth, is this like one of those legal dominoes that as it falls, others fall with it?
Absolutely. That is the real concern here. This is sort of the camel under the tent's nose, particularly as it potentially relates to H.R. 5, because this essentially is all of the employment provisions of H.R. 5 put into law without actually passing a law. And so you could see that domino effect. And this could have any number of implications, constitutional implications, freedom of speech implications, and the list goes on.
So, Travis, what was the big surprise in this case in terms of where the justices land? I mean, 6-3, I mean, 5-4, that's what we're accustomed to in many cases. 6-3, a bit more significant.
It is, Tony. I think, you know, the surprise here is seeing the unfortunate fact of Justice Gorsuch penning the majority's opinion. Now, joined by Justice Roberts, too. I mean, Justice Roberts has had there's been concerns about how he's ruled, but he's ruled as an originalist in many cases. Unfortunately, I think he and Justice Gorsuch ruling this way in this opinion really, you know, puts them on the anti-originalist side of the camp here. And Justice Gorsuch has had a stellar record to this point. He's been very good. We supported him based on our analysis of his background, his record. And President Trump has been stellar with his nominations to the federal judiciary. This is an unfortunate result because, as Justice Alito points out in dissent, the originalist analysis of this case leads one to conclude that the word sex in the Civil Rights Act does not include sexual orientation and gender identity, as Justice Gorsuch concluded for the majority. So, you know, it is a surprise. It is unfortunate. It is going to have ramifications. Mary Beth mentioned H.R. 5, H.R. 5 known as the Equality Act, a grab bag of liberal policies, anti-religious freedom policies that Congress is trying to pass. Here, the court plays into that hand by those wanting to pass H.R. 5, but basically penning policy into law when there's the court's supposed to be deciding case, and it sets the stage, makes it easier for some of these anti-religious freedom policies to be advanced. You know, I know some of the things we're concerned about, which Mary Beth has analyzed and looked at, are what Justice Alito points out in dissent, compelled pronoun usage, many other concerns. The court didn't deal with a religious freedom legal question today. It only dealt with a statutory interpretation of sex question. But now the court's ruling opens the way for these religious liberty issues to be litigated and fought out in the courts. And it's not just going to be the courts. It's going to be in the public square of the country. So the court has opened up a way forward in which we're going to see a lot of contentious issues in the days and years ahead.
Yeah, far from resolving anything. This is much like the abortion topic, Roe v. Wade, where the court was going to resolve this issue and say this is the final word. I mean, we're 46 years later, and it's still a probably it's a bigger issue today than it was then. They're not resolving this because it runs counter to science. It runs counter to biology. It runs counter to history. But I want to just point out, because Mary Beth mentioned H.R. 5, you mentioned H.R. 5, today, after this decision was announced, Joe Biden tweeted out that, you know, this was a momentous step forward for our country. But they went on to say, we know that our work is not yet done, saying that he will sign the Equality Act into law if elected president. So this is just the first step in a total remake of what it means to be a male or female, and quite frankly, what religious freedom means in this country, because it will not stand up to this redefinition of terms.
Tony, I think that's true. You know, in the majority, Justice Gorsuch tried to claim that religious liberty would still be protected, pointing out Title VII religious organization exemptions, the ministerial exemption, other provisions for religious freedom. The reality is, though, that this decision today will negatively impact religious freedom. That's just the reality. Even if the court did not decide a legal question involving religious freedom today, because the exemptions and protections that Justice Gorsuch mentions do not cover every possible impact of religious freedom. And we know one of the issues underlying this batch of cases, the court consolidated under the Bostock case, but the Harris Funeral Home case involves a funeral home that the owner wanted to operate according to the tenets of their faith. And you're going to now see more and more issues arise in which claims are being made against Christians and others that you are supposedly discriminating this way, that way, and the other way, when in reality they're trying to live out their faith. This is not going to go away. The court's decision today furthers it, allows it to continue, exacerbates the problem. So there's not a religious freedom resolution to this matter, and that's very clear from the decision today.
I mean, this allows it to, as Mary Beth said, it is the camel's nose under the tent. Before you know it, the camel is occupying the entire tent, and that's how this works, is that it is an incremental approach. This is one thing the left is very good at, and of course, in this case, the court handing them this stepping stone toward essentially trampling on religious freedom. I have asked both of you this question because it's one that I think a lot of people may be pondering, is how can those who say they support religious freedom also be supportive of the redefinition of human sexuality and the definition of biological sex, which sets up this collision that we're witnessing in our culture today between the two?
I think you really see that a lot of what's going on here is actually government discrimination. You're talking about government mandating an acceptance of an ideology instead of letting the public square be open to all ideas and all views. You know, there are no less than half a dozen new questions and even old questions that this opinion still leaves unanswered and even brings to the forefront. We mentioned the ministerial exception, which the court has before it right now to determine its scope and things like that. And so you really have this sort of opening the door to greater governmental discrimination against those who would have a traditional view of human sexuality or, you know, the marriage relationship and family. And that's really what we're so concerned about, is government should not be mandating these ideologies and belief systems, that you should be free in the marketplace and even interacting with the government to continue to hold your views that Kennedy said in Obergefell, good, reasonable people can still hold.
Yeah, he said it, but in application, it's not happening. I mean, there is no tolerance for those who would deviate from this imposition of redefinition of human sexuality and the redefinition of terms. I mean, it breaks with science, it breaks with truth, it breaks with history, it breaks with everything. And the only way it can be adopted is, Travis, is by force.
Tony, that's true, because where people are not convinced because science and truth doesn't back up the claims of those who are pushing ideologies, you have to compel and coerce. You know, to your point about the linkage between this issue and religious liberty, there is a link. Many of the current religious liberty challenges we face are because those out there trying to coerce people of faith on religious liberty or on their sexuality beliefs and coerce them, compel them to violate their beliefs, which is a religious liberty issue. And we have to stand up to it. We have to do it with grace, but not back down. And there's a lot of intimidation out there. I think you see that even in some of the ways the justices are trying to navigate this. They're scared of the public response.
Travis, we've got to leave it there. Firm. We do need to be firm. We need to keep standing on this, folks. We're out of time. Thank you for joining us. Until next time, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.